News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
It is 8:06 on Mobile Mornings, 251-343-0106. If you want to join the show, you're certainly able to in that way if you want to call, or you can text us at that same number. Again, 251-343-0106. Lot to talk about this hour. We will talk with Rob Hobart about some local issues from Lagniappe Mobile at the bottom of the hour. Everybody, of course, is aware that day two of the government shutdown.
Mm-hmm. That's today.
So that's kind of the main thing on our plate as we try to, figure out. Well, I would just say we kind of know what's going on, what's at play here. It's a lot of politics, and it's not much else mm-hmm. other than that. But we're projecting when it might come to an end.
There were some guesses yesterday on Midday Mobile of when it may come to an end, and I'm still feeling pretty good about where I set the over-under yesterday on Friday evening.
Friday evening, yeah.
And
I think we both agreed on that.
I didn't realize, I guess, I was just reading the Senate won't be in today because of Yom Kippur, which I thought was yesterday.
I thought it was, too.
I'm a little confused on that, but I don't think they'll be in today, according to what I just read. Yesterday, again, with another vote, the Senate Democrats refused to end the shutdown and blocked a House-passed stopgap spending bill for the second time in fewer than 24 hours. And they're saying federal agencies are preparing to start laying off as many as 750,000 employees daily. And that's something I'm trying to wrap my head around, too, because some people I saw were saying that if the government is shut down for somewhere around 2 months, that would give the Trump administration a lot more leeway to seriously cut people out and fire them from the government. So I'll have to dig in a little bit on that, because some of what I've read said they can start furloughing as many as 750,000 a day starting today. The Senate voted 55-45 to end debate on the CR. That's five votes short of that 60 needed to clear the legislative filibuster. It's interesting who's voting yay and nay. You have Democrats Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada and John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, as well as independent Angus King of Maine, who all voted yes to get that CR through. Fetterman, there's polling showing now that he's more well-liked among Republicans in Pennsylvania than he is Democrats.
So he's got to be careful to get reelected, because he's in, I guess, very purple district. It's mm-hmm. kind of a purple state, and some of the districts are more purple than others, right? Mm-hmm. So Fetterman, I think, just has always got to keep that in mind.
All but one Republican, and you could probably guess who voted against the bill. That would be Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and other Democrats had objected to the so-called clean CR because it failed to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies set to expire at the end of the year. Republicans in Congress have maintained that the subsidies can be considered separately, and that's a really main point of their conversations right now. Some Democrats are wanting them to have that conversation before they vote for the CR.
Yes.
Republicans like the Vice President Vance and the Senate Leader Thune are saying, let's pass the CR, then we'll have those conversations with you.
What they're arguing about does not expire until the first of the year, I believe.
Mm,
so they're like, we'll have a couple of months to work it out. Democrats are saying we don't trust that you will act in good faith on that.
And ahead of yesterday's vote, Johnson, who's been battling it out with Democrats on, I say Democrats. They are Democrats, but they wouldn't tell you that, on a lot of the national media. And he's been saying, no, it's a clean CR. He said it's actually exactly what they voted for previously,
yep.
Another CR. He noted that nearly half of our civilian workforce is being, quote, sent home amid the shutdown, quote. I mean,
think about this. Democrats sending people home, essentially.
mm-hmm. He said our troops and our Border Patrol agents will have to go to work, but they'll be working without pay. Food assistance, veterans benefits, and vital support for women and children are all coming to a halt, and he puts all of that on the Democrats. Democrats, previously in the face of government shutdowns, were obviously kind of singing a different tune, right?
They were. This not long ago, maybe back, just a few years back.
It is not normal to shut down the government when we don't get what we want.
If the government shuts down, it will be average Americans who suffer most. A government shutdown means seniors who rely on Social Security could be thrown into chaos.
Families will be hurt. farmers will be hurt.
Yeah, senior citizens, farmers, families, they're all hurting now because of the three of them. That was AOC, and that was Schumer, and that was Jeffries. And pointing all that out is Vice President J.D. Vance.
You don't shut down the government because you have a policy disagreement about a totally separate issue. And that's what the Democrats have done. And it really is astonishing to go back 20 years. I have seen Democrats stand before the American people and say, you don't shut down the government because you're not getting what you want. And here they are last night. They shut down the government. Why? Because they're not getting what they want.
There you go. That's pretty cut and dry.
Yeah. And so as far as who that works for the government can be let go and when, in the New York Post, they write as many as 750,000 federal employees are expected to be furloughed each day. That's according to the CBO estimates, Congressional Budget Office. But those furloughs could soon become permanent firing. So I guess they start chopping them out, you know, a day at a time. And then once that, I think it was 61 or 62 days, if the government is shut down for that long, which would be the longest.
Yeah.
Then those could become permanent, I guess. And Trump has been mentioning a lot of that here recently, too. And you wonder why. If this is the same CR, I mean, you know why. It's because they don't want Trump to get this win. And why won't the Democrats vote for it if it is the same clean CR that they passed back in March? And some fiscal conservatives have an issue with that. You know, Massey and Paul say, why are we still spending and using more or less the same kind of spending levels that we were during the Biden administration?
That's right.
But what the Republicans are saying, the main issue is the Democrats want these ACA subsidies, not just for legal American citizens, but for
illegals,
right?
Here's Johnson.
44 Senate Democrats voted to reject a clean, nonpartisan, continuing funding resolution to keep the United States government open. The Democrats said instead that they wanted to give health care to illegal aliens instead of keeping critical services provided for the American citizens.
Now, let's play Schumer, what he's got to say, which is typical of what you would expect him to say in this situation. And then Dalton and I will try to explain where Schumer, the role he's playing in all of this, right?
Yeah.
Here he is.
Not $1 of Medicare, Medicaid, or ACA is allowed to go to undocumented immigrants. Not a dollar. So why do they keep saying this? This seems to be their theme. Because they're afraid to talk about the real issue. It's typical Republican response.
And you talk about not afraid to talk about the real issue. Let's talk about the real issue with Schumer.
Well, before that, too, his counterpart in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, was actually had kind of a go-around with Jake Tapper on CNN last night about the illegal aliens health care. Let me play that for you, and then maybe why Schumer is driving such a hard line on this.
Donald Trump blessed it as well.
So let me ask you about a provision that the Republicans are talking about quite a bit. I know you want to talk about, and Democrats want to talk about, extending the Obamacare subsidies, which expire at the end of 2025. But they talk about the provisions, and it's right here, Subtitle E, and this has to do with the repeal of health care subtitle changes, and specifically what it is. How they characterize it is, you want to give health insurance to undocumented immigrants. I understand that's not really an accurate depiction, but what it does do is...
It's a lie.
It's a lie, but what you support does bring back funding for emergency Medicaid to hospitals, some of which does pay for undocumented immigrants and people who don't have health insurance. And also, there is this provision, and it's not about undocumented immigrants, it's about people with asylum seekers and people with temporary protected status, et cetera, but about their ability to get Medicaid. So they're non-citizens, they're not undocumented, they're not illegal. Why even include that in a bill, knowing that they're going to seize right upon that and use that to message? I understand that.
So he didn't go fully against him, but a little more nuance there from Jake Tapper. Says, why include this if this is the thing that's holding everything up? It was interesting. Hugh Hewitt, who, you know, I'm not a Hugh Hewitt acolyte necessarily, but he wrote an opinion piece on Fox News. He says this whole Schumer shutdown, as it's been branded by the right, that the reason this is happening is because Schumer is afraid of the hard left in his party, specifically the leader.
AOC.
Yeah, AOC, who's taken that mantle up, of course, maybe taken from Bernie Sanders. I don't know. You could probably dispute that or not.
A longtime U.S. senator is shaking in his boots because of the threat of AOC. Mm-hmm. In a future election, basically, right?
Right. So Hewitt writes, they know that Schumer is afraid of Representative AOC and the hard left Democrats she leads. It's, quote, unofficial leadership, of course, but Senator Bernie Sanders passed the baton to AOC and she's using it to beat Democrats into line. Schumer knows he will lose to her in a primary in 2028 because he's 74 now, has been in Congress for 50 years, and will be 78 when he runs again. It's well known that AOC has been looking to move up a little bit, maybe to a Senate seat. Or
well,
2028 also has another race coming up.
Yes.
And then Hewitt does his Hewitt thing a little bit here and complains about Schumer being there for 50 years, which I think we can all agree with here. So he says Schumer organized enough Democrats to vote for a continuing resolution in the spring to avoid a government shutdown and got creamed by his left wing for doing so.
I mean, he did.
Now Schumer's refused to do it again because he can't handle a second battering from the left. He said part of the left is ignorant of the rules of the Senate, but part of it is bent on this fight. It cannot win because they have lost for 10 years. I don't know if it's been 10 years. It seems like the Republicans have been doing a lot of losing in those 10 years as well. But Hewitt goes on, even when they won with former President Biden, they lost because of his infirmity and the stubbornness of his family and inner circle. Anyway, Hewitt goes on. I think he is on to something there about the power that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has over the Democrat Party, including the Senate. And she's a congresswoman. But does this sound like a congresswoman here? She is on MSNBC, AOC, from, I believe, a couple nights ago.
And I saw some Republican members of Congress saying, oh, well, if we have this shutdown, it's because of AOC. Well, if that's the case, my office is open and you are free to walk in and negotiate with me directly. Because what I'm not going to do is tolerate.
Yeah, I'm going to turn that off because I guess they have somebody. This is somebody that recorded it and was laughing in the background. Thought I had a clean version of that. But that's a congresswoman saying, and remember, the House passed this.
Yeah, they
didn't need the Democrats' votes. They didn't need moderate. I mean, they already got that through. She is a congresswoman. She's saying, hey, my door is open. Negotiate directly with me. Why would they negotiate with you?
Vote-wise, she's out of it. The Congress passed it. The House passed it. And the snafu with the Senate is they need to get to 60 votes, mm-hmm. right? So there's the problem,
right? Yeah.
And you know what? I don't know what kind of power that AOC has, where someone would want to knock on her open door or whatever and say, hey, I'm here. I'm taking up your invitation. Let's hammer this out. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And Schumer as AOC, I guess she has not made any proclamations about what her future in politics will be it running for president, vice president, the Senate, but something more than likely is going to change the next time around, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
And that's where Schumer is all shook up because she's gunning for his Senate seat.
Yeah, I mean, he will likely run against her for Senate if he does run. He might see the writing on the wall enough that he resigns, but
I would love to watch the ads in that campaign going at each two mm-hmm. Democrats going at each other with clips from things that were said to the press back and forth. Man, that'd be tasty.
So what has Trump been saying about these layoffs? He's been talking a lot, obviously, and was on Tuesday leading up to the shutdown. And while Trump was saying he did not want a shutdown, we played some of this audio yesterday. Yeah. It presents him with the opportunity for the administration to carry out layoffs as part of his mission to slim down the federal government. Quote, we don't want to shut it down because we have the greatest period of time ever. I tell you, we have $17 trillion being invested, so the last person that wants it shut down is us. Now, with that being said, we can do things during the shutdown that are irreversible, that are bad for them and irreversible by them, like cutting vast numbers of people out, cutting things that they like, cutting programs that they like. I think Jeff Poor kind of mentioned this yesterday, and I feel this way. It is so strange to me that does it appear to you Republicans are winning the battle of the rhetoric here, of the war of words and pinning this on Democrats? I know that, you know, staunch Democrats would say, no, this is Republicans all the way. I saw people posting, how can this be the Democrats' fault if you have a Republican president, a Republican majority House and Senate? They leave out the part that you need the 60 votes in the Senate, which we know. But it really does seem to me, and I think major parts of it are because of Vance and the work that Speaker Johnson is doing out there, Democrats seem to be losing this political battle of rhetoric and will continue to lose the further along it goes, because it will only play into Trump's hand, where they get to slim down the size of the federal government if this keeps going on and on and on.
But one point you made, and I think it was very correct, was that when Republicans are giving these messages, if they're not on Fox News, they've got to battle themselves, mm-hmm. because it's not a easy playing field. If you go on a Sunday show on CBS or NBC or ABC and you try to make your point, the moderators are not very moderate. They're battling back at you over the facts and everything like that, where Democrats still got that wide open field to run. Again, we get back to, where are we getting our news these days? And fewer are getting it from the legacy networks,
yeah.
and also cable news, fewer and fewer, and more are getting it elsewhere. And that's why I think the charade, for the most part, not completely over, but it's taken quite a hit. I mean, all we have to do is point at the last election alone.
Mm-hmm.
What an upset that was, or if it wasn't an upset, it was mind. It kind of shattered Democrats' idea of where they were when it comes to that fight, when it comes mm-hmm. to the media and the power they have. Suddenly, they were like, how did that happen?
Yes.
And it happened because people are less and less inclined to believe what they read in the New York Times and what they see on ABC.
And by the way, a texter pointing out that a congressman, Ralph Norman, out of South Carolina, filed a bill to end congressional paychecks during a government shutdown. I like the idea. No chance that would pass, I would say.
Yeah.
More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 on the text line, 251-343-0106. I think Michael basically agrees with what I was just saying. He says the reason, in my opinion, that Republicans are winning is that the Sunday shows and MSM don't matter anymore. More people are getting their news and information from X than they are from any of the other platforms.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to that, Michael. I think there's also a lot of other outfits, journalism outfits, podcasts, yeah. that people subscribe to and listen to and read that aren't the legacy media and are more willing to tell it like it is or tell it like they think it is.
Yeah, they shoot holes in the legacy media side of the story, basically.
Saying all of that, though, they're usually responding to what is being said
yeah.
on those shows, and I haven't seen, and maybe I've just missed it, I've seen a lot of Mike Johnson on these left-wing shows. I've seen Vance on these left-wing shows, a lot of Republicans. How many Democrats have we seen on the conservative talk shows here over these last few days? I'm sure there's maybe been one or two.
On a conservative talk show?
On Fox News? Or
none.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any.
Not since it really became a shutdown. Right?
No. I mean, that tells you a lot right there, because they know they're going to get questioned in a way that they're not going to get questioned on NBC, and they feel like a sitting duck.
Well, yeah. And now you have like Jake Tapper, even though he didn't go full bore against Jeffries there, they're saying, listen, you guys are kind of...
yeah,
you know, dancing around this a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah.
Derek says, wait, they still get paid, as in Congress? Yeah, they do. I looked it up just to make it clear for you here. The U.S. Constitution states that senators and representatives, quote, shall receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. The 27th Amendment prohibits changing congressional pay midterm. Because their salaries are funded via mandatory or permanent spending rather than annual discretionary appropriations, their pay is not subject to the same funding lapses that trigger shutdowns. However, you wonder if this creates some interesting times on Capitol Hill. Congressional staff, especially those whose work depends on appropriated funds, often do not get paid or end up being furloughed during a shutdown unless there's a separate funding for the legislative branch. Hey, go get me that coffee.
Yeah, no.
Oh, wait, you think I'm being paid? I'm not getting you that coffee.
I will not get you that coffee. 8:30 with Dan and Dalton on Mobile Mornings. Dominating Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.
100-0.
Well, it's not
call
like
off
we won it once or twice. 3, 4, 5, whatever. A bunch of times we win.
Rob Hulbert knows. He joins us now with Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And as always, I feel like I say this every week because I do say this every week. Busy week in the Lanyap, Rob.
It is always busy. You guys are trash talking here in the nappy off season. I like it.
Hey man, we're training. We're in training
right
now.
You know what,
Rob?
That keeps us sharp.
The very short nappy off season.
Yeah, especially for you and the crew.
Like the NBA.
We'll be running that promo. We'll be running the promo that we won those things up until the next nappy. So
that's right.
That's the plan. So let's start with this because. We had the runoffs last week, of course, and Spiro Chiarigotis, he wins. We've spent a lot of time since then talking about the numbers, where they came from, you know, the increase in turnout. But so far, not a whole lot of discussion about what happens in November once that baton, well, they already passed the baton, I guess. Once it's actually passed from Simpson to Spiro, you guys have Kyle Hamrick specifically wrote it up, a good profile here of Spiro, had a good conversation with him after his win.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to go and talk to him just more about, you know, where are you now? What did you think about the race? And, you know, how are you preparing to be mayor? And, you know, he has a nice profile of Spiro, along with some numbers. He included some of the numbers stuff, the breakdown, mm-hmm. too. But, you know, just kind of talking to him about, you know, where, you know, obviously he's sort of in a decompression mode at this point. Said, mm-hmm. you know, he's taking a little break and he's, as he told Kyle, he's starting to feel human again. But you know, it's a very short honeymoon here because he'll be taking office on November 3rd. So there's a lot to get up and go. You know, and I wrote my column about this week. It's just, you know, okay, you're the mayor now. What do you do? And I think that's the big issue for him. I mean, obviously he's got a lot of big projects that he's going to shepherd across the finish line. You know, the airport, the arena, the mm-hmm. Hopefully Bayfront Park as well. You know, those things that will really be important to the city. But also, you know, it's a situation where, as you know, kind of his administration is a little bit born on third base in a way, because the finances of the city are in a lot better shape.
Yeah,
and you know, this is a good opportunity for him to put some finishing touches on a lot of things and to really improve some of those quality of life issues we have, like the blight issues, the crime issues, the litter issues. Those things could be really signature things for his administration. I think it's going to be tough for him in terms of, you know, if he has any huge, big ideas right now, I don't know that there's going to be room spending-wise to do anything huge at this point with the arena and the money that's being spent there. You know, for the short term, at least, I think that the city's going to have to kind of stay on the fiscal straight and narrow. But mm-hmm. there's still a lot to be done. And I mean, certainly, you know, I think downtown and blight and those issues, they could go throughout the city. I mean, God, blight's everywhere. And I think it would be a really big issue for them to take care of.
You make a really good point, Rob, because there's got to be a decompression after a win like that. There's got to be an exhilaration after a win like that. Like, you have to feel happy about yourself and your team and what you accomplished. But this little period of time will not last long, like you said.
No.
And suddenly you're not the mayor-elect. You are the mayor. All eyes on you all the time. That's a transition from whatever you were doing in life, right?
Sure. I'm sure everywhere he goes right now, somebody's telling him, you know, hey, you know, have you thought about this, or have you looked at this, or this is the problem on my street? And that's what it's about. You're going to hear that everywhere you go. But that's the job. It's a very busy job.
When we talked with Quinn Hillier on Tuesday, he mentioned he wants to see a plan, like, I don't know, in writing, probably something like that, like exactly what Spiro is going to do as mayor. And I'm not sure. I mean, he kind of laid that out, I guess, during the campaign. That's the whole point of campaigning, right?
Yeah.
But I thought this quote was interesting that Kyle picked up in the story. And I'll just read this quote because I want people to read the whole story. It's really good. He says, "What I'm mainly thinking is now it's time to do everything I talked about. I tell people I try to be a person who never makes promises they can't keep. Part of that is limiting your promises unless you know you can keep them. But there are a few issues I promise to focus on and tackle to the best of my abilities." He said a lot of the post-Tuesday has just been thinking about execution steps, how to execute plans to actually affect youth gun violence and affordable housing and public transportation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I understand where Quinn's coming from in that regard, but, you know, also at times when you put when you put it down on paper, such as, you know, we will be the safest city by 2020 or whatever it is, you know, those types of things can come back and bite you in the butt, because it is, there are a million things that happen.
Yeah.
You know, the mayor has plans, but they also, you know, the city has other issues that come up all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know what exactly is going to be there, or what the issue is going to be, or how successful you can be with things like, can you make kids stop shooting each other?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he can solve that one, he'll have every mayor in America calling him and asking him, how did he do it?
That's true.
And that's not a Mobile issue. That's a national issue.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, certainly one that he wants to try to tackle, but it's a tough one, man. And, you know, I mean, we've tried to tackle litter forever, and then people still throw stuff out the window. And we've had blight forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's going to require the city getting really tough on people to stop litter and stop blight. I mean, you've got a stomach for it.
Yeah.
So those are all things that that are tough to put down. I mean, certainly you make promises and hope they can happen, but you got to make them happen. And I don't know if I'd put them down and say, by next week, this will occur.
And of course, there's other factors at play here, including other elected officials. I mean, that's why you get a proposed budget and then the actual budget. But I'm interested in how early Mayor-elect Chirigadas starts talking with city council. Maybe it's already underway, but you've mentioned blight several times, and that was the discussion again at a council pre-meeting or post-meeting, something earlier on Tuesday. Not quite pen to paper yet. I mean, they haven't voted, just discussions going on. It seems like, well, Councilman William Carroll has been the most vocal about wanting this to be more of a citywide thing than just Henry Aaron Loop, right?
Yeah, I mean, I understand where William's coming from on that, but and certainly there is a problem across the city, but I think at the same time, we haven't done anything about this, and let's focus on downtown first, which is the most pressing issue at this point, and let's see if we can get something done with that first and then move on. I mean, this idea that we're just going to all of a sudden start, you know, go from 0 to 1,000 and we're going to go and cover blight everywhere across the city at once, I don't think that's a winner. I think it's going to be a tough thing to do. And, you know, it would be a lot easier to at least start with downtown, where there are pretty obvious issues, and also where all the buildings touch each other and they really affect one another. And so, I mean, to me, that just seems like it's an unnecessary delay in it. I don't think that that's, you know, something that is, I think the council ought to stick with the concept of let's get this done downtown first, or get it rolling downtown, build a unit to do this stuff and build a way to do it and figure out how to be successful with it, and then branch out throughout the city.
Yeah, I like that idea of keeping it focused on one area that you can try and win that one, get that to the point where people are remarking about, wow, things are really changing. Wow, that really looks good. And then you will have the support to continue to try to do it throughout the city. So I definitely agree with that, Rob. Also, the city is suddenly richer.
For the county.
The county, county is richer because of something that the elimination of a position and freeing up the county to their financial department to do their thing. And talk about that story and what's happened.
Yeah, Scott Johnson wrote a story the other day about how the county, it's just about the county budget, and one of the things he had in there was to talk about how the county all of a sudden was taking in a tremendous amount more in interest payments, that, you know, they were earning interest on stuff, and it had gone from like $50,000 to a couple million dollars. And I just like circled it and was like, what's this about?
You know,
it's like, maybe we ought to look into this a little more. This is pretty interesting. And essentially what he found out was they're saying, hey, you know, we got rid of the elected treasurer position. And as a result of that, we've been able to do things that the treasurer wouldn't do previously.
Huh.
Wouldn't or couldn't, I don't know, but wouldn't, you know, it didn't get done this way. So they've started putting the money, when they've got money sitting there, they put it in interest-bearing accounts and, you know, make money off of it. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden it's making a lot more money, because previously just wasn't being done. So it's kind of an interesting story, a little bit of a bureaucracy that maybe was holding them back.
Yeah, but I'm not the financial
Ray Dalio.
Yeah, I'm not the financial expert on this show or but I can tell you that the return on the dollar was pretty astounding, Rob.
Well, I mean, you know, you can get. I mean, right now, I think Treasury bonds are like 5%. I mean, it's you can get pretty good interest. There's a lot of interest bearing accounts that are paying 4 or 5% or close to it. So, I mean, if you're putting things in, they don't necessarily have to be wild investments. I think
you
get a decent return, and of course, the county's dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars, so it's possible to make some money if it's just sitting there.
Yeah, true.
Put it somewhere where it can earn some interest.
Yeah, I get it now. Dealing with all that money, that's very true.
I have a can't miss opportunity that I'm going to run by the county commission here.
I think going down there and I think got some real good ideas.
Yeah, invest in this; it'll be great. Also, Rob, with yesterday being October 1st, a ton of new laws went into effect, but the state or certain parts of the state not quite ready for all of those laws. And one we've discussed quite a bit here is Lulu's law about the shark attack alerts for specifically Baldwin County and Mobile County as well after the shark attack of Lulu Gribben. So that law technically went into effect yesterday, but you had Kyle Hamrick writing that ADCNR says they're not ready yet.
No, they're not. The feel-good law of the century is like, there's nothing ready for it. Nobody knows what it will cost. Nobody even really knows how they're going to do it yet. It's just this sort of hey, let's pass this law about letting people know if there's sharks attacking or whatever. Obviously it's a horrible thing that happened to her, but it is such a rare thing that happens. To have an alert system why don't you have a lightning strike alert system too? That, somebody gets hit by lightning. It is really rare that these things happen, nobody really knows how it's going to work or if it's going to work or, how you determine whether somebody's fake calling in, shark attack, shark alerts everywhere, or or people are spotting dolphins, and there's all sorts of stuff that there are issues with it. But yeah, they're not ready for it. I don't know when it's going to get done.
I don't think people are ready to know how many sharks are out there. I mean, because they are out there, right? But they rarely.
Last time I heard, that's where they are.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, can the alarm be? So we're not even sure how it's going to work. We don't even know how it's going to sound.
Dun-dun.
I would propose an amplified voice of SpongeBob screaming, screaming.
Yeah.
SpongeBob's little voice screaming, "There's a shark out there!"
That would be,
I can't impersonate SpongeBob because he's such a unique talent.
But I just think the woman who, from Jaws, the one who just screams shark, it kind of stutters and screams shark. Mm-hmm. I think that would be
that's one. Yeah, we have that. We have that audio.
Anything from Jaws, just get out of the water or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that has seemed baffling to me, but I've lived around the water my whole life. Most of us have. There are sharks. I catch sharks in the bay sometimes. There are sharks around. It's just part of life, and we just have to deal with it. Certainly I can understand that if there's a shark attack and people are alerted, that might help. But it is, I think we've had 3 in the Alabama waters since the 1800s. It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Larry from Daphne, real quick, Dalton. He texts in, Alabama needs to take the Florida approach to water. If you see a body of water, walk up to it, splash your hand in it. If it tastes the water, if it's salty, there's sharks in it. If it's not, there's alligators in it.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good.
Right.
Pretty good test. Rob, great issue again on stands now. The ink as dark as a doll's eyes. A little Jaws reference there for you. But if folks would rather read online like we do here, how can they get that, get signed up?
You can go to lanyetmobile.com. It's just a dollar to sign up for the first month. It is $9 a month after that. It's 30 cents a day, folks, and we are putting news out all day long. So if you're depriving yourself from news for 30 cents a day, think about it. There's There's room in your budget for that. You need the information.
All right. The nappy domination team of Dan and Dalton certainly agree with that. Thanks, Rob. We'll talk in a week.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
Rob Holbert.
We made him laugh a bunch. That's always satisfying.
I'm all out of lines I remember from Jaws, by the way. More Mobile Mornings on the way. We'll tell you who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show next. Hey, thank you, Kane. 855 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. We'll get to the Jeff Poor Show here in just a second. Let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy. Football season is in full swing, and Underdog is the best place to get in on all the action. You can select entries and win money right now in Alabama. I've been playing for well over a year on Underdog. It's a whole lot of fun and easy. Playing on Underdog is easy. Just choose whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like rushing yards, receptions, touchdowns, and more. And there's plenty of options for you tonight. A little Thursday night football with the Rams and Niners. Mac Jones back behind quarterback, back behind the line for the Niners again tonight. And three Game 3 wild cards in MLB. It's going to be a whole lot of fun playing with Underdog. Get your entries right. You could win up to 5,000 times your cash. And today, a good day to get started. Download the Underdog app, sign up with promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and you'll score $100 in bonus funds or entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Underdog, make plays, win money. Must be 19 plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/play and get terms. _DFS_.html for details. And if you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncbgambling.org.
All righty, Jeff Poor's got Angelo Furno on the first hour. That's what's former DEA?
I believe so, yeah. Man?
He's got some good stories. He's got some good stories from back in the day that you wouldn't believe some of the enforcement that was going on not only around the world, but right here in Mobile and Baldwin County. It's kind of like, ooh, didn't know that.
Yeah, and he has plenty to talk about today in the world of you know, immigration enforcement, of course. Also, April Marie Fogel joining Jeff in hour number two, and former congressman, and he's running again, Jerry Carl will be on with Jeff in hour number three. So stay tuned for that.
Text line, you guys, you have someone texting about the situation that Paul Birch addressed about the video of an illegal being struck by police after he was struggling with them, and he was tased a couple of times, and they were trying to figure out if he had a weapon and all that. Are we supposed to feel sorry for the illegals that local news is obsessed with? When you fight with someone, especially the police, you will and should expect to get hit. Okay, I guess that's in defense of all of that.
And there's an opposite response too on the text line. The texter says, so we're going to justify punching and beating up a guy with making him comply? The problem with justifying it, quote, with making him comply, complying is a sliding scale that police can use to justify anything. What if I just wasn't walking fast enough? He could say I wasn't complying, and then he could use physical force on me for that. Okay. Then says, then the video shows they already had the dude on the ground, so just take a beat, be professional, and arrest the guy. I'll be honest, I haven't seen the video, so I need to check it out before I give you my full opinion on it. And a lot of jokes about sharks being in the Gulf. And texter here says, it's going to be revisited one day, and they're going to wish they had never done it because of the tourism, and it happened in Florida, and Florida didn't propose a Lulu Act. I think that's the, you know, it's part of this is you have other people, it's voted on by the state legislature, but other people voting for something that Mobile and Baldwin counties have to do.
Yeah.
And everything I've seen from Lulu, I love her. It's an absolute tragedy what happened to her.
Right.
It did happen in Florida waters from what I remember. And her representative in Mountain Brook is the one who pushed so hard for this. We're down here living in it and say, this is a bad idea. But we can say that, and it did say it till the cows came home. It still went into effect yesterday.
Katie Britt voiced the same. Back in the morning at 6.